As an entrepreneur, you need to be leveraging tools and software to run your business as smoothly and efficiently as possible. That is why I'm delighted to partner with Sage for this season of the pod. Sage is the global market leader for technology that helps small and medium businesses perform at their best. To learn more about Sage, go to sage.com or click the link in the pod description.
Don't be afraid of change. That'll be the big thing I tell people. Always look at expanding, look at growing the business and adapting to how technology is changing and how the world is changing, you know?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. I've chatted to you about this before, but I view this podcast every week as a new mentor. It's my way of getting a brand new business mentor every single week. This week, my mentor is Kieran Mulligan, the founder of Blue Insurance. That name might be familiar because in 2018, Kieran made a lot of headlines when he sold the company for a reported 70 million euro. This is an incredibly frank, honest, and open chat. I love these stories of Irish entrepreneurs who've had a successful exit from their company and are now able to tell the entire story. We go into it all. This is an incredible chat, and I hope you enjoy it. Kieran, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Gary.
It's brilliant to chat to you.
Thank you. I haven't been doing too much over the past 13 months since I retired. So it's nice to do something different in the morning other than the gym or walking the dog or whatever else that's going on.
Nice. So we can hear the whole story of your retirement now today and what's coming next. So you said you retired. What did you retire from?
Well, retired is probably the wrong word. I'd say semi-retired. Enjoyed the break from the madness and the stress of the daily life of an entrepreneur or a business owner or whatever that goes on. But I finished up in Blue in October the 30th last year. So I think people in Dublin went into lockdown around 3 days before that. And really, I was in lockdown until the end of May.
Okay.
So for me, that was sort of, I didn't really get to enjoy my life of semi-retirement as such.
Yeah, that was a strange time to step away, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the right time for me, but it would have been nice even if I had been able to sneak away on a holiday just before that or whatever. But yeah, I think the fact that I had a new house and I was moving in and there was stuff to do in the garden and there was a gym being built and I had to be here to speak with builders at the time before they shut down as well, kept me going. But it was different. I think if I didn't have the house, I probably would have went back to work at some point.
It's the same with every entrepreneur. They're always like, oh, I can't wait now till I finish this project, or I can't wait now till I sell this business. And then a week later, you're chatting to them and they're like, I just had this idea for this thing and I'm just going to see what happens with this now. And they're starting something new straight away. Yeah. Talk to me about the timing. So obviously, just anyone not familiar with yourself, tell them just what you were doing before the sale, what you actually sold.
Okay, so I created Blue Insurance with my business partner at the time, Ron Devereaux, back in 2003. And the aim of setting up Blue Insurance was to become an online solution for, initially was the travel trade, travel insurance for the travel trade, and give a good solution, a good website for travel agents and tour operators to book in Ireland. And that sort of expanded quite quickly with the likes of Ryanair.com and AerLingus.com changing. We're starting to see a bit of slippage in travel agents back in 2006. So at that point, then we decided to move into the direct market, say multitrip.com, people would have heard, Gadget, pet insurance, LA, and stuff like that. So really our focus was initially to set up with the travel trade. We created other projects from our other brands from that relating to travel, which would have been the likes of carhireaccess.com, because that was related to travel, wedding insurance because of honeymoons abroad. So they were probably our first three products that we would have set up: travel insurance, car hire access, and wedding insurance. And from there it expanded into a whole niche. We were probably the leading provider of niche insurance in Ireland and one in probably the top five in the UK at the time, by the time we sort of finished, I finished up in 2019. It was 19 now at this stage. Yeah, no, sorry, 20.
It's hard to remember. I think of things of before COVID and after COVID, because I can't, even I was doing a quick pod before we started chatting there about, I was doing the kind of wrap of the year, you know, the best things I've invested in or bought during the year, I couldn't remember anything. I had to go back and check receipts to see when I actually bought it, because time has just lost all meaning.
I know, it's just been, it's sort of a bit of a nightmare for the past year and a half to 2 years at this stage. For me, we were doing so well actually up until the time of COVID came in. I was in my final earnout. We were 28% ahead, and then the last 6 months, which would have been the big bumper of it, COVID came in, Paddy's Day, all travel insurance stopped covering COVID, and Paddy's Day, and then it just died off. But look, getting back into the whole thing of it, I think one of the reasons we were successful was that we were innovative all the time. We adapted and changed each time. So when we were initially dealing with the travel trade, we moved into Northern Ireland and the UK in 2006-2007. Then, you know, others came out, VHI came out with their travel insurance product. We adapted, we encouraged the agents to move with it. But when we started to see a slippage in travel agents' business, then we decided to go into the direct market ourselves. And we're probably one of the companies that were responsible for a very competitive travel insurance pricing out there. Because prior to us coming in with our annual policy in 21.99, we were seeing, you know, banks and other institutions quoting an annual policy for 150 quid a year. Now, the average a European policy now is about 20 euros or less. I know we were doing at 15.99 at one point. And, you know, worldwide, you get for about 35. So that's a big drop. It really came in and shook up that market. We decided that we were going to go for, you know, less margin, but bigger volume. And as a result, that was very successful for us. And then Multi-Trip went into the UK. And went into Australia, and then we kept expanding the business. And then we had the big crash in 2008. So even though we launched this product late 2007, because it was so competitively priced, people had stopped doing their three holidays a year and decided, you know, I'm only going to do one, if any. And because the product was so competitively priced, they kept renewing with us as well.
Okay.
We also then saw immigration happening a lot during 2008 to 2012. So in 2008, we launched the backpacker insurance, backpacker travel insurance.ie or .com, whatever, which one it was, UK, whatever. So at that point, you know, we took a veil of that market, and where we're seeing others collapse and others stop marketing and advertising, we kept going with it. We kept marketing through radio, which was one of our big success, to Dublin Bus, looking for run-ons, looking for deals. And, that took off. So we made profit every year since we opened in 2003 all the way through. And just that kept growing and growing and growing as we went on, you know?
That's incredible for any kind of business to make profit every year, never mind a large business like yourselves. What drove that?
I think, again, it was the innovation. It was always wanting to be the best of what we were at. It was to be competitively priced. It wasn't going to be too greedy. We wanted to make sure the product was quality, that people got a product, you know, because there's some products out there you can buy at cheap price and it's probably not worth buying in the end. Whereby we were saying, okay, we negotiated hard on the net price. We didn't take too much margin, and then we sold it out to the public and they loved it and they kept buying it, even, as I say, during the crisis. But to be innovative each time, to move with whatever was happening in the economy or the industry. So we were always first out. So we were first out with the CahireAccess.com, which was the brand name. It was doing, as I was saying, on the tin, the Multi-Trip, which was doing that as well. So we had all the key domains, which were very good. One of the ones I didn't have, which I was raging about, was travelinsurance.ie. A UK company had managed to pick that up before sort of we kicked it off. But the Multi-Trip.com brand would be a household name out there now as well. Wow. So we brought in the right people. Like, we brought in Craig Doyle initially as a brand ambassador. Then we brought in Catherine Thomas, and then back to Craig again as well. So I keep saying we. I'm no longer part of Blue anymore. So, but... excuse, it sort of feels like it's part of the family. But so I think that sort of helped. It gave us, you know, the creds, having those brand ambassadors sitting in there behind the people knew them, and we were offering a good product and good service to the consumer.
You mentioned something there that you're multiple different domains and multiple different product offerings, and they're all branded individually.
They are. And we always had a dilemma. I was always having discussions with my head of marketing, Ian, at the time. Do we change this to make it all part of just the Blue brand? But we were seeing others, the likes of Chill, who were well known as well at the time. And they were strong in home and motor, but they weren't as strong in the products that we were in. So at the time I decided that, no, let's keep the different brands. Let's not, we did come out with the Blue insurance at one point when we launched a 2-year car and home, but Blue initially would have been purely through the travel trade for travel insurance with the travel trade at the time. Mm. But in 15, when we decided to launch 2-year car and home insurance, then we did actually take the Blue brand and bring it out there. But our focus on that was very much the home and motor, a bit like what Chill would do and so on. But our core niche products had their own brands and we kept the numbers. And others tried to come in and take that from us, but we've been very successful at retaining that at the time because of the brand name itself, you know?
Was that tricky managing so many essentially different brands together? Like, because that sounds like a lot of work. As, like you're telling me, you're reaming them off there. Yeah. I'm like, that must be like running 10 businesses.
Yeah. And we basically had 14 brands. So we had bicycle, wow, insurance, gadget, pet, car hire, access, travel, wedding. I'm trying to think, is there any more I'm forgetting about? Home and motor and so on. So yes, it was difficult. The only good thing about it was when there was a crisis. So even during COVID, say, for example, before I left, when COVID kicked in and travel just stopped, we were able to turn on gadget insurance. We were able to turn on pet insurance.
Okay.
So, you know, everybody was buying a pet during the, well, probably during the whole of COVID. So you saw our pet insurance skyrocket. So we were able to take travel off the air and put pet insurance on, or we're able to do different things.
I get you.
Gadget was really popular. So even though it was difficult and you had to manage, you know, probably 7 different radio ads at any one time, I think we did well in the end with what we built up on the numbers. And basically the product said what it did in the tune. It was carhireaccess.com or .ie or whatever. And it basically, we were selling what the brand name was. So I think people could associate with that easily.
Mm. It's, yeah, when you think of it like that, you're able to push and pull different levers then depending on, because like how long did you run Blue for?
So I was co-founder in 2003 with Rowan, and then I bought Rowan out in 2013. And then we just started to take the company in a different direction at that point, stepped up the management team. So Maeve, my head of operations, director of operations, Dave, our IT, was 3 board members, and we had brought in some outside consultants, guests to the board. And we just, the structure of the company changed and we went into the home and motor market. But still the core thing was trying to be innovative all the time. So we were the first out there with 2-year car and home, and people loved that. Unfortunately, the markets that was underwriting that at a time didn't want to stay in it. And sort of, so you've always got these tugs and pulls and you're trying to adapt and change. But yeah, I mean, it was very successful up until the time I left. And I believe it's still very successful now. Maeve is now running the business, which is great.
So you've seen kind of boom, bust. In 2008, when you saw travel, obviously, diminish hugely. What was your reaction to that then? What did you do to kind of combat that? You touched on it a little bit earlier in terms of pulling other levers, but kind of talk me through, sure, that, because I think for businesses now who are in COVID and are struggling with it, it's probably good to have a kind of a fresh perspective on things.
So one of the key things, well, there was a number of different things that made us keep being successful during that period. One of it was that we were going to still continue to advertise. So we had only really launched multitrip.com, but because, as I said earlier on, the price was competitive, we were of the belief that people would continue to still buy the product, even if they were taking one holiday, because it was nearly as cheap as some people were selling single trips or annual multi-trips at that time. The next key thing was then we went to our media partners. So the likes of FM 104, Q102, you know, Today FM, whatever at the time, and said, we're not going to stop advertising. Everybody else is. We have a crisis going on here, but we will continue to do it. But we're going to do it at half the price. So we are not going to continue at these current prices that you are having to go say with us. And also we want extra bonus slots. We want bonus. We went to Dublin Bus and said, right, cut that price and we want run on. So, and generally, you know, if people are stop advertising, they still want buses with advertisements on them. So we were able to get the run on. And that for us was a key thing. I can remember we paid for 2 weeks on Dublin Bus and it was going around a year and a half later still. the same ad. No.
What does run on mean to anyone not familiar with that? Is what does that mean?
Run on is you pay for 2 weeks, and if you're lucky, the media provider will give you an extra 2 weeks.
Okay.
You know, free of charge. Now, some of it probably built into their pricing. However, we would always stretch that. We'd push for 4 weeks or 6 weeks, and Perrine's head was wrecked with, come on, let's get more of this. Let's get more of this. It was always, he'd come back and say, I've got a great deal for you. And then I go back and say, no, we need to get more. We need to get more. And he always delivered on it as well anyway. But yeah, no, for us is if we didn't get value, we didn't advertise with you. So okay. If anyone ever came looking and knocking on our door, and we ever advertised with them, it means we didn't get value off them. To be fair to FM 104, I think we've been 13 years on FM 104 on sponsorship of weather or sport, and same with Q102. So they gave us the deal and we stuck with them, and we're very loyal to them. And likewise, and Dublin Bus as well, you see Multi-Trip and Gadget and other brands going around on Dublin Bus as well. So, but that's all changing, you know, there's more the digital side of things now, so SEO and PPC and all on the Facebook and everything. So it is changing bit by bit, but still, we still very much focus on the traditional advertising, and it had worked for us, including radio.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, because it's almost like the forgotten child now. When you talk to kind of a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, radio, TV, and newspaper, you know, it's almost like this, really? You know, like you're from the dark ages. What impact did that have on your business? Like, were you mainly traditional with digital added on, or how did you see that evolve? I suppose that's a better question. How did you see that evolve from your time starting out to now?
Look, it was evolving naturally. The digital side of things, we were told initially that, like, another brand we would have had was annualtravelinsurance.com. And you have the likes of the Money Supermarkets and the Confused in the UK paying 70 million a year of advertising. But yet, because if somebody typed in annual travel insurance, because we had that domain, annualtravelinsurance.com, we were sitting in position 2 in the UK on the natural search engines. So, you know, and we were told by different people over different periods, oh, your domain name won't make any difference anymore. And to some degree, it did and it didn't. In the UK, it certainly kept working for us. But then the speed of your site and other things, you know, the scoring of your website really became more important. So we were constantly having that battle. But I think one of the key successes that we did have in the business is that we brought in our own developers from the first year. So our IT director, Dave Moore, he set up his own company before Blue Insurance. And I went and spoke to him, you know, to negotiate about building a website for us when we first started. And he quoted 12 grand to build a website. And we said, great, that's the deal. We're happy enough. Let's go with it. And then at the end of the year, we wanted to sort of update the website a tiny bit, a few little changes. And he was quoting another 12 grand. I go, hang on a second, you built the whole site for 12 grand.
That's how they get you.
We're going to get screwed here. So we said, let's get him in here. And we brought him in as an IT director, gave him some shareholding. And then we developed our own development team from there. Sometimes it's great to have your own development team. Other times, if people leave or salary increases are being requested on it, that's more the challenges that you have. But I do think the fact that we had our own team, we were able to, you know, build sites quickly. Some of them are good, some of them weren't as good, but you know, I definitely think we were able to move quicker than others out there in the marketplace by having our own IT team. And I think by the time I left, it was probably about 12 or 15 in that team at that point.
Wow. Okay. And then going back to traditional media, was that always a massive driver for your business? Was that kind of like the core driver or things added on, or at what stage did that change for you?
I think they probably still are. Well, maybe up at the time I was leaving, they probably still were. But the fact that people were probably sitting at home and might not be listening, because, you know, for us, traditional radio was always good because people were driving into work and driving home from work. And if you ever heard our slots, they were 8:20, 8:40, you know, 17:20, 17:40 in the evenings, the odd lunchtime thrown in. But for us, there were so many people driving to work and driving home from work, and it was taking them their period, or they might listen in on the apps or whatever. But generally, that was a winner for us. And then, you know, with the size of the number of people in Dublin, then we would have been on Dublin Bus as well. We did a little bit on Cork, on Bus Éireann in Cork, and when we would have done the likes of the local station, Spin South West and iRadio and stuff like that as well. And then obviously the odd campaigns going on. Well, we would have had a good campaign on News Talk as well for a while with the Home and Motor. and we negotiated hard on Sky News. So we had Sky News Ireland for when we launched the car and home as well. That was good for us. The only problem with Sky News Ireland was they couldn't give you on the hour. It was every half hour.
Okay.
So even though Qatar Airways had it in the UK, they couldn't cope with it for some reason. I don't know what the technology issues were for them, but we did every half hour. But it was just good to get the brand on TV as well. And I think one of the best deals I ever did was I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here on TV3. So I think we started off the campaign at about 150 grand. And then I said, look, I have to bring in an airline partner because that's a bit steep for us for 6 weeks or whatever. And then I spoke to the airline partner. He goes, leave it with me. I'm going to see if I can get this over the line. He couldn't. So I said, look, airline partner can't do it. We have to bring this down to 75 grand to look that we were doing. And then they came back and said to me, oh, look, we're moving off TV3 to 3E. But because it was the first time it was going to 3E, there was more and more marketing of it.
Right.
And I think at that point, I brought it down. It came down to about 50 grand. And by the time I finished negotiation, it was 40 grand. And they had bigger viewership on 3E because it was being marketed so much at the time. And I think we'd Gadget and we'd Multi-Trip on that. So that was a real, and they told me afterwards, you really screwed us down on that. But that's part of the negotiation.
I don't think I'd like to be sitting across the table from you negotiating on anything, if I'm honest.
I don't know. Sometimes you get me on a bad day, I'll pay up a bit more, but generally we like to get value. So definitely got value, and I'm a Celebrity for that one anyway.
How did you measure what was driving for you in traditional? Because that's always the stick people used to be traditional with. Oh, you can't measure, you can't measure, you can't measure. How did you equate what was good and what didn't work?
It was numbers, it was policies coming in, it was the profit in the business. Like every year we made profit, and we actually put the profit back in for investing for better technology or to grow the business or take it to, obviously we were in the UK and we're in Australia with the products. For us, it was about getting the numbers. Now luckily we got many awards every year. So we were best travel insurance company in Ireland from, I think we won the award the first year we opened, all the way through until we finished. We won best travel insurance in Northern Ireland since 2008 up until this year. I was at the event this year and Blue won it again. So it was nice. It was nice to get the award so the staff could see that, you know, well, all this effort that we're putting in. And I have to say the staff are amazing in Blue. I mean, I believe I have one of the best management teams there. I always say that, but you know, the majority of Blue staff, not even the management team, were behind the business. They were supporting the business and they cared about the business. And you know, from the first year we opened, we did our staff party, our very first one with three people, to London, our Christmas staff party. And then the last one probably would have been in Paris. And that was a bit of a mad one in Paris. That was probably 15 was the last big staff party. And then I took the senior team away. And so every year we would have done Malaga, we would have done Budapest, Barcelona, everywhere. So the staff got to really enjoy it and feel like they're part of the overall business as well, you know?
You're making me feel bad now. Our last Christmas party was to the Gaiety Panto. So I think I really need to up my game on this one.
You need to up your game. But having said that, like we did sort of, we would have done Saba and Red Torch Ginger, like when we moved back to Dublin when the numbers got really big. And we would have been into Lily's afterwards and everyone just had just as much crack there as well. But it was nice to bring them during the earlier stages, to bring them to Europe and the Christmas party and, you know, something different. And that was one of the key things we sort of felt that during the crisis, when everybody else was getting their salaries cut and reduced and whatever else was going on, we didn't lay anybody off. I think we froze the salaries for 1 year during it. So our staff turned around and gave feedback into a consultant that we would have brought in for to check the morale of business and so on. And they said they never really felt the downturn in Blue Insurance,
wow,
which was nice to hear that, you know, it never impacted them too much.
You mentioned in 2013, you bought out your partner. What was the motivations behind that?
So myself and Rowan were on a red eye over to London. I think it was a 5 o'clock flight or something, or 6 o'clock flight. And we were in the back end of London in this miserable North London suburb. We were both tired. We come from a Gadget insurance meeting. And on the way out, we're sort of saying, knackered. Now we were walking back to the train station in the rain or whatever. And I said to him, oh, somebody offered you X million now, would you take it? And he goes, I would. And we're messing back and forth. And then the next day we went for lunch. And I said, so remember you were talking to me yesterday, if somebody was still offering you, would you take it? He goes, yeah. He goes, I'm tired. Now, he was only 43. But I turned around and said, okay, well, look, leave that with me. So obviously the figure that we initially discussed in London didn't happen. But within a few months of that, he says he's ready to move on and take a break from it. Because, I mean, there's a lot of pressure in the insurance industry between the regulation and everything going on. They're constantly negotiating rates every year and so on. Because we would have had our own schemes as such. So he decided to bow out. So July 13, Ron agreed that we were stepping back, and I bought him. He left the business in September 13. And then luckily that year we were on a management for growth course as well. So Maeve, myself, Ron was on it, and Dave. And we were just able to structure the business and create that proper senior manager. Because you're always wondering, at what point do we need a HR manager? At what point, you know, even we didn't really bring any even a HR person in until probably 15 or 16, around 15. So from 2003 up to 15, we managed it ourselves, and we had very few issues. We were always trying to be fair with staff and so on. So Enterprise Ireland Management Growth Course is very good as into how to align your senior team, how to align your junior team, and all the structures below that. And yeah, so Rowan left in September 13, and at that point then we're going, right, what are we going to do with this business? We need to be innovative again. We came out with some more products, bicycle and other bits and pieces, went into Australia again with travel. And then we start working on the 2-year car and home, which was going to be something different altogether, you know.
How did you feel? You know, solo captain now, you had Rowan before that. What was going through your mind?
To be fair, like I would have, and Rowan would probably agree with this, is that I would have very much have been driving the business from a sales point of view, from a development, from a website, from marketing side of things. And Rowan would have been more the background, regulatory, accounts back in those days, prior to us having bringing in our own full accounts team and so on. So, you know, I would have very much been driving and pushing it, and I wouldn't say aggressive, but, you know, if I want to get something, I sort of focus and, right, let's do this. Let's get down this route. And I'll listen to arguments, but unless the arguments are saying, look, this is definitely not, and you're going totally off the wall, then we drive down that route with whatever we're looking at. So for me, it was, I was okay with it. And sometimes you have partnerships, and we very rarely had arguments at all in the business. And if you did, you just work it out. But it was then just saying, right, you're ultimately making the decision. Okay, I always consulted with the management team around me, listened to their views. And ultimately you as the owner, rather than as a partner, have to make that call. Is this the right way to go and so on? And I think it just naturally flowed, but very much worked with Dave and Maeve, who are the directors of the business as well. And we would have a regular management meeting each week and discuss stuff, and you know, we'd listen to them, and sometimes I come out with some stupid ideas and maybe go no, or Dave would go no, and they get dropped and so on. But I don't think we made too many mistakes in the business over the years, and that's probably why the business was so profitable. And, you know, again, the innovative side of things sort of drove on the business, you know.
You kind of read my mind there. How do you manage innovation? Because clearly you were innovating kind of consistently, because that was a phrase you brought up consistently there. How did you manage innovation, or how did you drive that forward?
I think there's a number of different features in regards to innovation. I mean, one of the very thing from us starting was that we always wanted to, even though there's only three of us in the business when we first started, was that we always wanted to give the impression that we're a much bigger company. So the presentation of everything that went out to travel agents at the very beginning, and a lot of them would have known me from my previous job, but a lot didn't. So some people actually thought that we were a UK company because the presentation was way ahead of everybody else in the market at that time. And then I think the next innovation is, well, we wanted everything to be online. So at that point, people were still writing pads, and we were one of the first out there to have an online solution that was really slick, very easy, worked very well. And then you adapt, the innovation then adapts to, you're first out into the marketplace with a brand or with a product. And I think, you know, I remember like in 2006 when we launched carhireaccess.com and .ie, nobody else had probably even heard of what Car Hire Access was before. And I remember like that one, the wedding insurance and the travel and others, the bigger companies to sort of laugh a bit to some degree and skid, oh, what are these guys at or whatever. But in the end, you know, because we were first out there, we had the brands, and we were first and we were well known, then when others tried to come into the market, like the likes of AIG and AXA and others came try to come in 2010 and a bit later with these products, they didn't make the inroads that we had already made. So first out there to the marketplace with a brand, with a product, and basically doing what it says in the tin, really worked for us from an innovative point of view. We also then dealt with the economic crisis in a way. So one of our big clients at the time would have been Budget Travel, and they went bust in 2008. And that was a massive, that was a £2 million book of business at the time. So to lose that account was going to be devastating to the business. But we adapted. We had come out with a multi-trip product. We decided to go out, as I say, not too greedy and make a small margin. But we also then came out that year with the backpacker travel insurance because people were emigrating. So we could have sat on our backsides and said, okay, we're going to lose 2 million, whatever. But the fact that we came out with this product, we were able to have it up and running within 2 months from the time of when we negotiated to getting the rates off the underwriters and having it rolling out on the website. And have it in Ireland and the UK at the same time. So I think being able to adapt and change and be first out there and deal with the whatever the economic crisis is at the time, come out with a product to suit that. And likewise, that's why we came out with gadget insurance, because the iPhones were starting to come out. So in 2010, we launched the gadget insurance. We were out there with the pets. We were seeing, you know, more and more people taking their pets and stuff like that. And then obviously bikes were starting to get popular at some point during that period. And we rolled out the bicycle insurance as well. So I think to adapt to the climate change is good, or to the economic climate at the time, being able to move on that is important. And yeah, I think, you know, always trying to come out with something different. And again, the 2 year car and home in 15, when prices were through the roof, we spoke with Behavior and Attitudes to be asked them to do some research on us. On the products, and they came back with everybody loves the idea of 2 year car and home, right. You know, because prices had gone up and people are sick of having to renew every year. So for us, that was a win-win situation.
How do you spot trends? How do you see things coming down the line? Where are you looking for? How are you picking up these signals?
I'm terrible. I won't read a book, but I will read a business or a newspaper back to front. You know, nearly over again, I'd read Bloomberg, I'd read Financial Times, everything. Give me a book and I'm terrible. Like if people have given me books as presents. But I think by looking at those type of like Bloomberg and so on, and you're going in, you can see the trends that are starting to happen. Or, you know, because I was concerned about this, you know, about COVID back in December of, when was it, 19 at this stage? So it was really only starting, but you could see that it was changed by constantly reading up what was going on, reading Asia Times and stuff. You could see it was spread. And I was saying, we need to be able to look to adapting at this. And at that time, we were talking with underwriters, but how are we going to deal with this? Because if this comes into Europe, you know, we need to be able to still offer insurance or offer a solution, or we're going to be hit by claims, you know. So we were out pushing the wedding insurance. We were out pushing travel insurance at the time. And then obviously at a certain point, they just said no. And then we go, right, travel has just stopped. Let's go with pet insurance. Let's get gadget out there. Let's move with other products to keep going. Some people might just sit back, but we were constantly moving on it. Look, I mean, we were always wanted to be even more innovative. We wanted to be able to, for people to take a photograph of their reg, send it into us, and then we come back with a motor insurance quote. That was the ideal scenario. Right. But unfortunately, the way insurers work together and the system, it doesn't allow you to do that. But that would be the ideal scenario. And then we're also considering whether we allow people to turn on gadgets, turn off gadgets, turn on their travel insurance. That was an option we sort of did it with gadget at one point, where we were insuring 5 gadgets for one price. But underwriters were getting burnt. And I know the likes of Lemonade and others have struggled with their loss ratios, of where people I'm going to go out on my bike today. I'll turn on my bike insurance. I get home, I turn it off. Realistically, that doesn't seem to be working from a loss ratio point of view. But certainly we would like for people, you know, take a picture of the reg and then we give you a quote. At some point when everything comes together, all that technology comes together, people will be able to do something like that. And, you know, same with your home, your house insurance, take a picture of your house, send it in and you get a quote back.
It sounds like your mind is constantly taken over with these kind of trends and ideas. At what point did you think, you know what, I might like to step away here?
I think it was in 17. Regulation was becoming really intense, and not because anyone in the insurance industry was doing anything major, but I think because of the collapse of the banks and everything, the regulator at the time decided, you know, we need to manage everybody in the financial services and, you know, make sure everybody is, and became more stringent and became more cumbersome. That wouldn't be my ultimate decision. I was just one of those. I think it was just, I was getting tired. I'd done it for 15 years at that point. And in the head, I said, look, I'd like a break now from it. And we had grown the business substantially during that period. We're still on this trajectory. And obviously when you're selling your business on that, when it's on that trajectory, that's the best time to sell it. So we decided 17 to bring in IBI to go out and look to the market. And we had one or two who were chasing us. One of the big VCs at the time wanted to try and do an exclusive with us. But in the end, IBI went out and we had about six or seven players who wanted to buy us. And that process was a long process. It went on for about 15 to 18 months. We thought it'd be a short enough period. Wow. But by the time you get around to it all, it was like, I think it was October 18 when we signed. So, it was on and off period. But look, it was nice. We had about four or five VCs looking to buy us. We had a couple of insurers. And in the end, then Covermore bought us back in 2018. And they're part of the Zurich Group. They're an insurance specialist, a travel insurance specialist in Australia. And they bought us back then. So, yeah, we're ready to move on at that point and do the earnout and enjoy my life for the last 13 months of lockdown, as they say, you know.
I love hearing about Irish entrepreneurs that sell their business because I think the whole ecosystem needs that. You said buy an earnout there. What is that?
An earnout basically is you agree the first part of any sale is normally your upfront payment, which is the largest part. And here you go. Thank you. We're buying you. And then normally the earnout is a year, 2 years, maybe 3 years, depending, whereby you have to grow that business during that period and, you know, drive it on and keep it going and do a natural handover to who either the company that's bought you or for the team, the senior team below you who will be stepping into your shoes or whatever. So basically you get another element of the sale as part of the earnout. So that's really what the earnout is. And that happened from October 2018 up until October 2020 when I stepped down and said goodbye to everybody.
That's a long time.
It is a long time. And people said to me, you are not going to stay in your earnout period. You're going to leave. And then I thought, let me see how much I'm going to make out of an earnout. I'm better off hanging around and putting up with anything. And actually, to be fair to Covermore, they didn't interfere too much. They just let us get on with it. And sure, look, up until COVID, we were up nearly 30%, which was amazing. But obviously, COVID struck at the last 6 months, and that had a bit of an impact. But sure, you know, you deal with it, and you look for new opportunities. And my new opportunities after I left Blue was investments in shares and stocks and a bit of crypto. So I did well on that, so I'm happy out.
You've piqued my interest. We're going to have to get to that now in a second. I want to go back to one specific day. What was the feeling like when, obviously you sold, but then you had your 2-year earnout?
Yes.
What was the feeling like on the day the next morning, you wake up, what was that feeling?
A big smile on my face. Look, you'll always wonder, and even at the point of us selling, am I selling for the right price? Is this the right price? Do I continue, look for a bit more? Do I go on for another year? And somebody from the industry, I spoke to a friend, said to me, it's in your bank account. Take it. It's there. You just have to sign and it's there. It's in your account. You don't know what's going to happen. And When you see what happened with COVID and everything going on, it's the right decision. We felt it was right, and had a big smile the next day. And it's a bit surreal. Like even to this day, you know, my partner Brian, if he goes to the shop and he goes down the road and goes, "You could have got it cheaper up there. What the hell?" So the mentality doesn't stop. You know, it's still looking for value. You know, I wouldn't be a scrimper, but it's always in the head that I'm looking for value, looking for quality, but I'm looking for value all the time. And that never changes, and it never will. But yeah, even to this day, sort of the amount that's there, you sort of go, this is a bit surreal. But I just get on my day. The way I have been acting since I've left and the sale happened was just like I would be if I was in my day-to-day job. I haven't gone out and bought anything.
Okay, you managed to level that off. You found a way of dealing with that.
Yeah, I haven't gone out and done anything, bought anything ridiculous. If I want to, I can, but, you know, I just keep it real. And I think keeping it real and having good friends, have some really good close pals around me, and that them keeping you real as well and grounded is always good as well as a family, you know. So
definitely. I don't think anyone in Ireland will let you get a big head anyway. There's definitely a very quick to bring you back down to earth. You talked about your investments there. So this is your next strategy now. You're now making investments. We'll talk about the companies you've invested in first. Talk to me about crypto first.
Crypto first. Well, it's actually during lockdown, when before builders had to stop and so on. One of my builders was in here, and Philip, and he was telling me about Cardano and, you know, Ripple and a few others, and I just looked into a bit more of the blockchain. I didn't know enough, and even to this day, I wouldn't say I'm an expert. I have an idea, but for me, I saw the opportunity with Charles Hoskinson, who created Ethereum or co-founded Ethereum, and then he set up Cardano. And for me, I decided to invest in Cardano, a little bit in Ripple as well, and Polkadot as well. Mainly it's Cardano though, so I put a nice little sum in there, and Cardano went up to $3. I think I bought it at $1, but $3 has come back down. It's about 133. It will move again. I think with anyone, I've told my friends, look, invest in this, worth a shot, but don't put anything in that you feel that if you're going to lose it, you're going to be devastated. So if you have a bit of spare cash and you don't mind, throw it into Cardano. Put it down, and most of them have actually done it, and a few other friends and stuff. And I do think at some point that will be at $50 or whatever, $100 at some point in the future. It may be 7 or 10 years. We'll see what happens. And if I lost it, I won't be devastated because it's not going to leave me broke. And same with my friends. I said, where to punt? And there's a couple of different individuals that are sort of contacting me all the time, you know, consider, you know, putting into more crypto. For me, I don't know enough about it. What I read up on Cardano and others, you know, was enough for me to invest. I'm not going to be putting massive amounts of my money into crypto, but there's enough there that if it comes good, I'll be a multimillionaire again with crypto. For me, because I know the travel industry, my big winner for me during the year would have been investing in Ryanair. So Ryanair collapsed to half the share price it was in February of 2020, and or March, it was February, March time anyway. So I invested in Ryanair. It's been up and down every year. So I keep buying in the dip and selling in the up, and that's worked out very well for me. And probably if I still had been in my job in Blue, I wouldn't have been focused on the share trading side of things. And for me, that would have been sort of, yeah, I would have been too busy with the insurance side, but because I wasn't, had the house and everything else, I was able to focus on it, and I knew the industry, and I saw Ryanair as the least riskiest of all of the airlines to invest in, and I did, and it's gone well. Even to this day, I'm still in there, and I think there could be another year of it as well, because with Omicron and all the others coming, I think at least another year before we get out of this. And we're on a steady path that, you know, between whatever boosters and whatever else, I think we're another year before we do get out of this market, out of this crisis at the moment that we're in.
Do you think the same for the travel industry, another year to bounce back?
They've already bounced back, but It's very unsteady still at the moment. Everybody wants holidays. Everybody wants to get away. I think, you know, the spike again in September, October scared a few people. Omicron is making people, are we going to get stopped again and so on. So for me, you know, I'm going to launch a travel business in 2022. And for me, it's just deciding the right time in 22 when I do it. I don't want to open up a business and have to shut it down because of the lockdown and so on. So, but I do think there will be big spending on travel, and some of it has already started, but you know, the States opened up there in November. Everyone's gone away. I'm going away. You know, everybody wants to get out of Ireland and go and get to the sun and do whatever, go skiing again or whatever. But I do think it'll be into 22 before probably middle of 22 where you see, okay, things are comfortable again. And, you know, I was reading something from one of the guys in the EY program. So in 2011, we were finalists at EY Entrepreneur of the Year. And we're part of the alumni community, and a message came in on the group yesterday saying that, you know, this Omicron is having an impact, but it's making the overall, even though the transmissibility of it is high, it's making the actual virus weaker and weaker, and it's getting weaker as it's going along. So hopefully by the time we get into mid or late 22, this will be more like a flu thing where a jab is just going to cover you for the year and just hopefully fizzles out and nothing else comes along, you know? So yeah, just challenges ahead. I still think, I'd say from an investment point of view, there's another year of Ryanair up and down, and that's an opportunity, especially when there's negative interest rates being offered by your bank. You don't want to be leaving it sitting in there and then charging you for having the money there. But look, it's all good. I'm always looking for the opportunities, so continue to do so, you know.
I can hear that spark in you, and you alluded to it there, that you've a kind of couple of projects on the horizon. What are you able to tell us about them?
So I have a couple of projects that I'm going to do myself. I obviously invested in Catanical 2 years ago, which is the oil, essential oils and all that. So a young guy named Carl Murray from Dublin, brilliant guy. So diffusers and oils and all that, and that's gone really well, especially during lockdown. I've invested in a company called Melly, which is a car rental platform. And they're some of the guys that would have been involved with Car Trawler. So big investment in that, Bobby Healy and co. So looking forward to seeing where they go with that. I think it'll be very successful. I've done some small investments in media, but they're pretty small. And then I'm looking at doing my own coffee chain and my own travel company next year. And then I have to make a big decision, is when I come out of my anti-compete, do I go into insurance again? Do I want to go through the grief and stress of going back into insurance? And I know it. So we'll see what happens. But that would be very late in 22 for a decision to be made on that. But definitely the coffee chain and the travel company in 2022 at some point. And we'll see.
So you're going into retail and travel in a pandemic. You have,
hopefully coming out of pandemic. That's the yes. Plan. And probably the coffee chain should have been done 2 years ago, but I still think there's a market for good quality coffee. And something a little bit different, which we will be doing something different. And then the travel will be different. It'll be gone after the high-end market and cruises and high-end holidays. So we'll see how we get on with that. And we have good domains registered for those. So fingers crossed.
You're just leaving us teasing here. We're going to have to get you back on now mid-2022 to
redo
this.
Be able to give
this.
Away a travel prize during that time if we're back on then, you know?
Oh, we're definitely bringing it back. So that's phenomenal. So you're a bit of a contrarian. Would you describe yourself as a contrarian?
Possibly. Yeah. I'm looking for new opportunities, but even with the investments that I've done in other companies, I think my success will be where it's something that I'm setting up myself. So yes, one or two investments have gone well. I've also invested in Epion, a HR platform as well, 2 years ago, and they're going well. But for me, I think my success and what I want to be judged will be on businesses that I set up and found myself. So yeah, I think I don't want to be MD again of any company, because I actually enjoy the break away from it, but I'm happy to be involved on a monthly basis or every 2 weeks or whatever, where it's a half a morning or whatever, to come out with my ideas and innovation of growing business. And even though I say that, I'll probably end up being involved in the coffee company 7 days a week or whatever, 6 days a week, but and the travel company as well. But yeah, ideally, I don't want to be MD. I want to have the right team in there managing all of that. And then I'm the support in the background if they need me and to grow it on. So yeah, we'll see.
You want that skin in the game. Yeah. Two final questions for you before we wrap up. The last one is, I'm going to get you, I was going to say a book, but you've kind of quashed that one earlier in the chat, but I'll get you to recommend some sources where people can keep an eye on spotting new ideas and trends. What will you do different this time, Ciarán? This is my second last question for you. What will you do different this time with your new businesses that you've learned over the years?
I think, well, the big difference is I'm not going to be the MD. I will not. I'll be in the background. I'll be supporting. I will try and bring in people from outside of the business as advisors or shareholders into it. So that's the one decision I still have to decide on is, if I decide to open an insurance business again, do I put all my own money into it, or do I bring in some key people from industries, which a lot of entrepreneurs do, even though they've made their money, they still bring in outside influencers and stuff like that into the business, shareholders into the business. Something I have to decide. I don't know if I'm going to do too much different. I'll try and be innovative and different with everything that we come out with. So the coffee company, not going to say what it is, but I'm going to try and work on it. Something unusual within that business, as well as having amazing coffee, and the look and feel of those premises and everything that's involved with it will be really sophisticated and try to be different from others out there in the marketplace. Travel, again, high end and focusing on the high end. Nobody's really doing that as such. There's a mix of everything in travel. Like, everybody's doing a bit of everything. We don't want to do the book it in spade stuff to Spain for $2.99 or $1.99. It's going to be trying to give that better service, the better service for people that want to come in. And it may not be a shop. It may be an office. It may be a boutique that people come into to book those really high-end holiday type of things where you're spending 10, 20, 30 grand possibly on it, and give that extra service with the best team around. I think for me, that's the best. So obviously, be looking to building up that team over a period of time and having the best people from the industry working in the business and looking after them. Shareholding for, you know, try and give shareholding to every member of staff or those that are key to that business, to bring them in and look after them so they feel part of that business. And, you know, that's all open. What else would I do differently? I don't know. Like, we haven't done too much wrong in the past. Probably more delegation will be important. In the very early days, probably up until 2014, I was very much hands-on, middle of it all, middle of the floor. And then really, as we went to the 15, I was step back and let everybody manage their own teams and their own, and just give me your sort of, you know, I don't have somebody coming into my office and chatting to me for an hour, which could be done in 5 minutes. Short and sweet, keep it short, let me know what's going on. But yeah, probably a bit more delegation than anything. But again, as I say, I won't be MD, so we'll see what happens on it, you know.
You touched on it earlier there in terms of, you know, you keep an eye on everything. For people that are looking outwards, trying to figure out what's going on, where should they be watching, where do you get your information sources to spot new trends and new business ideas?
Well, for me, as I say, I don't read books, so I get it from generally it's news, it's online, it's business related. So whether it's through the business community networking groups, So we would have been part of Deloitte Best Managed. We were finalists at EY Entrepreneur of the Year, and we're part of that group of EY alumni, which is a really great group to be part of. But really for me, it's looking at the business side of things and what's coming out in China, what's coming out in Asia, what opportunities are, what crisis is going to bring an opportunity. So people need to, like, you know, if you're in the if you had contacts in China and, you know, the virus was spreading, is what opportunities, use your contacts to go and bring in all PPE, bring in all. You just constantly have to look at, see is what you're doing, you know, are gonna, what's gonna damage you and what can you make money out of by these opportunities, or negative or whatever, or even if business is booming, how can I increase it? How can I get more margin? How can I, you know, make it better all the time? So, you know, constantly looking. But I think networking groups helps. Some are good, some are bad. But I think reading and looking and seeing, you know, what's happening in the world and opportunities, you know, what's new technology wise, you know, I love technology, but I'm not the best at it. So if you're not good at something, is bringing the right team around you that can say, this is the future, this is the way to go, and start investing. Don't be afraid of change. That'll be the big thing I tell people. You know, always look at expanding, look at growing the business and adapting to how technology is changing and how the world is changing, you know?
Brilliant. Where can people learn more, a little bit about you, or get in touch with you?
Probably LinkedIn, though I haven't been on it as much as I should be these days. I also have my blog, The Fabulous Traveler, as well, which, because I love traveling. I'm on social and stuff as well. But if I don't know you, probably the best thing is LinkedIn to have a read up. Or there's some different vids, or you can, yeah, there's different things. If you type in my name, you can come across some different speeches and stuff on me. But
brilliant.
Yeah, look, it's thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
It was brilliant. Thank you so much for the chat, Ciarán.
No problem. Thanks again, Gary.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Ciarán. Thanks for staying right to the very end. And as a reward, here's a chance to win some cash. All you got to do is join my email newsletter. Go to mrgaryfox.com. That's mrgaryfox.com. And you'll be in a chance of winning. You also get a great newsletter every single Monday. I'll see you back here next Monday.